of us, Khalili, for the introduction. And first of all, I'd like to thank the conference organizer, Professor Ahmed, Professor Song, and Professor Zhu for their kind invitation. It's a wonderful conference, and it's wonderful. It provides a wonderful opportunity for Julian faculty to learn from all the experts here. And during my talk, feel free to ask any questions. And if I did not say anything clearly, feel free to ask me to repeat it, because last Friday I had oral surgery, and right now I'm not able to open my mouth wide. So feel free to ask me repeat. All right, so the title of my talk is Non-Concave Penalized Likelihood with NP Dimensionality. This is joint work with Professor Chen-Qing Fan at Princeton. As you can tell from the title, basically, we were interested in regularization methods. Basically, this type of methods regularize the conventional likelihood-based estimation, because I want to prevent the overfitting, and also want to generate sparse models to perform variable selection. And so-called non-concavity comes from the penalty term. And conventionally, people talk about convex penalty term. Then in the likelihood setting, you add a negative convex penalty to the log likelihood function. And if the penalty is non-convex, of course, the whole objective function may not be concave. So we lose the global concavity. And in this work, we are interested in the high-dimensional situation. Say we allow the number of variables to grow very fast with sample size, NP represents a non-polynomial order. First, I will talk about the motivation of the work. Say why we were interested in this type of problem. And then we'll talk about the penalized likelihood with concave penalties. Basically, we consider a wide class of methods that have been popularly used in the literature. And after that, I will introduce a path-following algorithm for the implementation. Finally, I would like to show you some numerical studies. I think I can skip the slide, because we have very nice introductions from previous speakers, including Professor Chen-Qing Fan and also some other speakers. So as within the theme of this workshop, the high dimensionality basically is a common feature associated with many types of data sets. Basically, the large scale data analysis commonly appears in many fields, including genomics, health sciences, economics, and finance and machine learning. And here are just some simple examples. For example, in the gene expression data and proteomics data, and also the recently the most recent SNPs data, the number of subjects is typically in order of tens or 110s. But the number of variables, the number of features, could easily be in tens of thousands, or even hundreds of thousands, or even in millions. And even if for moderate dimensions, if you're interested in studying the interaction effects among features, well, the dimension can easily grow up, right? Because instead of having p variables, you now have in order of p squared. And other examples, including the MRR and also functional MRI brain imaging data. Another closely related problem studied in the compared sensing and signal processing is trying to find sparse representation and approximation of the signals. Basically, you have a signal or image. You're trying to ideally want to find a very sparse representation, but sometimes you want to find a sparse approximation. And all these problems share a common feature. The number of variables, p, is much larger than the n. So larger p, large n, larger p, or small n, but with the common feature that p over n is typically called large. And a common practice is you pick a parametric model. You're trying to fit the model to the data. But when p is larger than n, well, we can easily run into trouble, because we have the issue of overfitting, and also the true model may not be identifiable. Take the simple linear regression model as an example. The mean vector, which is x times beta, is n by p matrix times a p by 1 vector. Well, if you don't impose any sparsity, there's, in general, there are infinite many ways to represent n by 1 mean vector. A common idea used in the literature is using so-called regularization approach. Basically, add a penalty term, which is second term, to the loss function. So instead of minimizing the original loss function, we minimize the penalized loss function, in the hope that we are able to recover the true model. And meanwhile, we'll be able to efficiently estimate non-zero components. And there have been many penalty functions proposed in literature, including the one you just heard from Young's talk. And in this work, we focused on the generalized linear models. And the goal is basically we're trying to estimate the true sparse regression coefficients, beta zero, which is a very high, very long vector. And we assume only a small number of components are non-zero. And we allow P to grow very fast with sample size, as I just mentioned. Well, the sparse modeling, you can always argue, is biased modeling, right? Because in general, you never know the true model. Basically, sparsity is what you believe that may not be the truth in practice. But a common practice people found in with real data analysis is sometimes if we impose sparsity, we can gain some in some way. For example, we can improve estimation and prediction accuracy and also enhance the model interpretability. But when the model is misspecified, the problem is still, I think, is widely unknown. In this work, we assume the model is correctly specified. And when P is large, then when P is much larger than N, in general, it's hard to identify the true model. The a few number of true variables and accurately estimating those number non-zero components. And classical methods generally will fail. Basically, the best subset, of course, is no longer available, right? Essentially, you need to go through all the possible submodels. Remember, when P is large, even in hundreds, it's still not feasible to implement this idea. And intrinsic difficulty commonly associated with larger scale data sets is so-called collinearity, which I will illustrate with a very simple simulation example. So basically, the two plots show the sample collinearity for IID Gaussian random variables. Well, since they're independent, we know that at the population level, the correlation should be zero, right? But when P, say, is 1,000 or 10,000, when N is 50, if you plot the maximum sample correlation, it could be very significant different from zero. For example, if you look at the blue curve on the left, the whole distribution concentrates around 0.5. And also, when you increase dimensionality, the distribution curve shifts to the right. And when you look at the multiple correlation, the correlation between one single variable and a group of variables, the collinearity becomes even more severe if you look at the plot, the two curves on the right panel. Basically, the two curves are pretty close to one, meaning that even in the null case, when P is too large than N, essentially, some variables will be highly correlated with each other, which is quite intuitive from a geometrical point of view, because N equals 50, right? Essentially, all the covariance vectors have to live in a quite low-dimensional Euclidean space. When N is limited, when you throw in too many variables, naturally, the maximum collinearity should be high. And as I mentioned earlier, the regularization approach has been widely used in literature, and here is a list of commonly used penalty functions, which also been mentioned in previous talks. For example, the L1 penalty, the sum of absolute coefficients, L1 penalty, and also the concave penalty, like SCAT, MCP, and also the SIGMA penalty proposed in an earlier paper. And also, I want to point out one interesting fact. The dentist letter is another recently proposed method by Kenneth et al. And turns out there's a very close connection between dentist letter and lasso. For lasso, basically, that minimize the residual sum squares plus the sum of absolute coefficients. So what dentist letter does is they minimize the sum of absolute coefficients subject to the constraints on the correlation between the covariates and the residual. And turns out these two methods are very similar. For example, in a paper by Bickel, Ritoff, and Chibakov, they prove that in some setting, they have the same asymptotic order for the loss. for example, under LQ loss with Q between 1 and 2. And in another paper is by Ming-Xiao Xing, Rush and Yu, they came up with so-called the diagonal dominance condition, which requires P is no larger than N. Under that condition, they prove that the two estimates enters in they're the same. And in another recent paper, the last paper, we gave a necessary and sufficient condition on which, well, if you pick the same tuning parameter in Menzel and density ladder, we would end up with the same estimates. And before I talk about the main results, I would like to talk about the two simple motivating examples. So basically, we're trying to understand a very interesting phenomenon which have been observed commonly in the literature. So the first example is a linear model. Basically, we look at the two model S has two model has 7 variables. The sample size is 60, and P is 1,000. And we generate a Gaussian design, and we're interested in so-called the probability of recovering the two model. So just imagine the regularization method, when the tuning parameter is large, essentially if you choose too much penalty, we'll end up with a very sparse estimates or even zero estimates. When lambda, the tuning parameter gets smaller, then the model becomes less and less sparse. And we're interested in one simple question. Is the true model somewhere on the solution path? Meaning that, is there some lambda that give us an estimate which has the same support as the true unknown parameter beta zero? And here is a table basically shows us the behavior of different penalty functions. For example, if you look at Lasso, which is a linear function, which is sum of absolute coefficients, essentially with only 10% chance, we're going to able to recover the true model. But if you allow flexibility in the shape, basically instead of using a convex function, we use a concave function. By concavity really means the penalty function takes off at its origin with non-zero derivative, but it has a decreasing derivative, the concavity, which is the real-way penalty I listed here, and the subscript controls where the penalty function stands between two well-known penalty functions, L1, string line, and L0, which is counting function. And for example, if we change the parameter, the parameter in the subscript, turns out sometimes we can perfectly recover a true model. But here, the result is not about estimation, the accuracy of estimation, only the recovering of the support. And in the next example, this is also the solution path given by all the methods. For example, if we carefully choose A, sometimes we can find out not only we can identify the true model, and also the estimate we end up with can be identical or almost identical to the Oracle estimator. So this is the first example. Second example, basically a similar message for logistic regression model. We see that if you use L1, there is only a very small chance we're going to recover the true model, around 20%. But if we allow flexibility, if we use concave penalty functions, we can dramatically increase the percentage of success up to around 70%. And also this is an overview of the sample solution path. For example, if you carefully choose A, we'll get an estimator that is almost identical to the Oracle estimator. So these are two very simple simulation examples, and we want you to understand this very interesting phenomenon. Basically, if you allow the flexibility in the shape of the penalty, well, if you look at the sparse estimates, the support and also the estimated accuracy can change dramatically. So you want to give a theoretical treatment in a unified framework, and specifically the questions we had in mind. So basically, first we want to see how high dimensionality all these methods can work, and also how should we understand the rule of different penalty functions. And third question is, what are the specific the properties of the estimator? And in the linear model case, some of the results have been obtained in earlier paper. And here is some of the about the setup. Basically, we consider basically consider a wide class of penalty functions, which is essentially is concave. It has a smooth derivative, and it includes, for example, L1 penalty, SCAD, MCP, and also the rule F penalty I showed you in the simulation studies. And here's a little bit more about the notation. We use mu to denote the mean vector, and sigma to denote the covariance matrix, and also we introduce local concavity, which is simply the second derivative, which is curvature of the function when it's smooth. And we need to use all this for studying the properties of the estimator. So one question people have in mind is, how should we characterize the regularized estimator, basically a solution to the penalized likelihood method. And this slide basically gives us the one characterization. And this looks a little messy. Let me just briefly explain what this all this means. So basically, if we're given a long vector, we call it beta hat. And it has some zero components and non-zero components. And we divide the design x, which is n by p, according to the support of the beta hat vector. So we take out columns with indices in the support of beta hat, and we call the remaining part x2. And if you look at the condition 1 and the condition 3, running means if we confine, we constrain the original optimization problem to a lower dimensional problem. Basically, the dimension is given by the support of beta hat. And we want to make sure that the subvector from beta hat should be a solution to the constraint problem, which is guaranteed by condition 1 and 3. Condition 2 basically ensures that if we put the lower dimensional vector in the full space RP, it's still a solution. So in short, these conditions are simple extensions of the KKT conditions in convex optimization. And these conditions will facilitate our asymptotic analysis. And we have, in the previous result, basically, we only study basically that the beta hat is a strict local minimizer because a maximizer, because in general, well, when p is larger than n, it generally is challenging to study the global optimality of the estimate, but here we give some insights on the global optimality. Say, if you have a solution, say, strict local maximizer from the penalized likelihood, when can we say that it's a global optimizer? So here are some conditions. Essentially, so this position gives us some conditions ensuring that the penalized likelihood, although the penalty function itself is not necessarily convex, but on some conditions, if you control the maximum concavity defined here, the whole function will be globally concave. So this is one idea in this proposition. And in this proposition, basically, we're interested in one question, which we saw earlier in the simulation. So when is the regularized estimator the same as the oracle estimator, which knew the true model in advance? And for a certain type of penalty functions, yes, we can have that kind of results. So basically, for scatter-like penalty functions, which has flat tail, essentially, when the magnitude of the estimate gets bigger, we don't penalize. We don't want to have extra shrinkage. In some conditions, yes, we can get the results. And for general, the case of P larger N, in general, it's hard to study the global optimality. So we studied the so-called restricted global optimality. Essentially, we want to see whether beta hat you got in the first place is a global optimizer in a restricted space. Basically, we look at space of all sparse models, basically union of all S-dimensional coordinate subspaces of the Euclidean space. Essentially, this is just the general version of the previous results. And next, I want to tell about a little bit about the statistical properties of the regularized estimate. Say, the first question is, when can we identify the true model? The second question is, if we do, how well the estimates can estimate the parameters? And here is, of course, we need some regularity conditions. Let me just briefly talk about the main intuition and forget about the formality. Again, X1, X2 is a decomposition of the full design into two parts. X1, basically, you can call it a true design. The design given by all the two variables. X2, the design, sub-design given by all the noise variables. And the first condition is pretty standard. Basically means the oracle estimator has to behave well. Essentially, we need to put some condition on the design. And a third condition, the condition, the 5 here, essentially means we need to put some condition on the nonlinearity. And more interesting is condition in the middle. So if you look at the left part, means that the L infinity norm of a matrix, of a huge matrix, cannot be too big. It has to be bounded by the two terms on the right. The second term essentially means that this term cannot grow too fast. We should constrain this growth order. And the first term is more interesting because C, capital C, is number between 0 and 1. It can never be larger than 1. And the second term is the ratio of the derivative of the penalty function at two locations. 1, 0, indicating sparsity. The other one is Dn, which represents our signal strength. Basically, it's proportional to the minimum non-zero beta coefficient. The intuition of this condition is essentially the correlation between noise variable and true variable cannot be too big. Otherwise, many methods will fail, and eventually, maybe all the methods will fail. So basically, each method has a breakdown point in terms of collinearity. And in the linear model, it's easier to understand the previous condition, which is obtained in an earlier paper. Essentially, we have the matrix becomes the one on the left. And essentially, it means if you take out each noise variable, you regress over the true model, and you get the regression coefficients. And you put all the regression coefficients together, you get this matrix on the left-hand side, which means the correlation between noise variable and true variable cannot be too big. And for the L1 penalty, and basically the condition becomes the condition here, essentially means this psi cannot be larger than 1. This is the so-called irrepresentable condition discovered in the paper by Zhao and Yu and also Wainwright for the L1 penalty function. And turns out this quantity can easily exceed 1 when p is large. And in fact, in this paper, we give a very simple example to illustrate that. And if we, instead of using, forget about the constraint of convexity, if you use concave penalty function, turns out this term can go to infinity because, remember, the concavity requires that the derivative should be decreasing. So asymptotically, this guy can go to infinity. So this means with concave penalty, we have much flexibility, which confirms the phenomenon we observed in the simulation studies I showed in the very beginning. And this slide summarizes this condition. The weak oracle condition really means that we can, with significant probability, we can identify a true model, and also we can accurately estimate the coefficients. And also we studied the oracle properties of these methods. So basically, oracle method really means in addition to recovering the true model with significant probability, and also want to make sure that the estimate of non-zero components should have the same efficiency as the oracle estimator, which is summarized in the second part, in the part B. And I want to say a few words about the algorithm. Basically, this is a very simple idea using the coordinate optimization, which has been widely used recently in statistics. So basically, the coordinate optimization basically is optimized the previous object function along each coordinate, and we use a second order approximation of the log Lagrange function. And in this case, because we have the univariate PLS problem, the penalized least squares problem, it has analytical solution. It's very easy to code and also very cheap to solve. And the numerical results are routine. I think basically confirms, basically we have the similar message I delivered in the very beginning with the previous the simulations. Basically see that if you use concave penalties, we have gained a lot in terms of in the prediction. Basically, we have a large reduction in the prediction compared to with the convex method and lasso method, and also the model selected is much smaller. And also we have the example from the Poisson regression, so similar results. And also we have the real data analysis, and I think I'll skip this one and jump to the end. So basically in this work we studied the penalized likelihood methods in when dimension p can grow in a non-planar order with sample size, and we identify conditions on which the estimator enjoys the non-symptotic weak oracle property and also the most stronger properties of the oracle property. And what we found is if you use concave penalty, we have the flexibility and the conditions become less restrictive. And also we introduced the coordinate optimization problem algorithm for implementation. And finally, I would like to thank my co-author, Professor Jingqing Feng, and also the support from these two funding agencies. And thank you all for your attention.